Welcome everybody to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, we're recording this at 9:42 my time, 7:42 your time. About, 24 hours from now, the NBA draft is going to be kind of wrapping up, or just starting, right?
No, it should start unless they're doing it at a different time this year. That usually starts at 4:30 or so.
Okay, yeah, right.
So yeah, it you're just probably middle of the second round wrapping up.
And so Mark Davis is already out there, and you know the Lakers are going to be getting ready to buy a second rounder here pretty soon, and we're in November. Like I was thinking about this today as all these rumors are swirling around, and I'm thinking the season should be being played right now. We shouldn't be talking about this.
I always associate Halloween and daylight savings time with the start of the NBA season, like with the start of the regular season games. It's almost like when we had daylight savings time, what was it, a week or two, or two ago, it was like, where's the basketball? My body clock was like, all right, regular season basketball time. It's that. And so I've had kind of a shot of adrenaline for like, woo, basketball's back, where I know I'm going to be exhausted in a few months because we didn't get that much of a break. But right now I'm like, hey, we got all sorts of rumors and all sorts of, stuff. But yeah, it should be real games right now. But everything's off schedule.
We have quite a bit to catch up on.
We certainly do.
The league is a very different league right now than it was the last time you and I spoke. Milwaukee looks like a bona fide championship contender. I'm not going to call them favorites because the Lakers are the favorites in my opinion, but they made the kind of moves that, like, actually, this is where I want to start. We'll get to each of the rumors and the moves or whatever here in a bit, but this is kind of where I wanted to start. I think we've reached this really weird point in analysis where small market attitude becomes a crutch. It becomes like a reason not to go all in. But I really enjoy the fact that Milwaukee was like, no, we're in a small market. Maybe Giannis leaves or whatever. But if Giannis leaves, we gave it everything that we possibly could to try to keep him in-house. And they walk away somehow without tampering, by the way, but they walk away with a starting lineup of Drew Holiday, Bogdan Bogdanovic, who I believe both you and I really, really like, Chris Middleton, Giannis, and Brooke Lopez. That is a fantastic lineup. And in a year where they're going to be trying to convince Giannis to stick around, this is how you do it. And instead of saying like, well, what if he leaves this? They said, if he leaves, we tried. And I wish more teams approached it that way.
No, I respect it. It's something that I think letting Brogdon go last year would have, if had they kept him, I think they wouldn't be here
in the first place.
Yeah. They wouldn't have to spend quite that much money for that, or that much in the way of assets.
Capital, yeah.
Yeah. But I do respect the, hey, let's go for this. Let's try to clearly staying the course. That was not really a viable option. Mm-hmm. So Bledsoe to Holiday is an upgrade, no doubt.
Yep.
Bogdanovic is an upgrade as well. That said, the degree to which they're upgrades, like how big of a difference will that make in a playoff series, right? Bledsoe struggled mightily in the playoffs, right?
And every year has, he's been there, yeah.
Every year. But we don't know about Holiday, right? Holiday's never been there. Mm-hmm. I will take my chances, right, over Bledsoe. That's, knowing that Bledsoe does struggle pretty much every year in those circumstances, I'll take my chances with the unknown. But we don't know that Holiday is going to be a high-level contributor. Furthermore, he's still the third option on that team. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of their struggles really stemmed from Giannis's skill set, right? The ability to shoot, make passing reads. And so I think they've improved a supporting cast, but I don't, they're in a spot where it's going to be very difficult for them to fill out their bench. Mm-hmm. And so they're going to be thin. And, we laughed at this as Laker fans, right? But it's a little bit different in this respect, in that, like, it's LeBron and AD and depth. So obviously, if LeBron or AD were to get hurt, that would be catastrophic for the Lakers. But on a team like Milwaukee, it's not that type of dynamic. It's they really don't have much in the way of resources to get put a bench in place. So I don't know. This is a long-winded way of me saying that I still have questions about Milwaukee.
Oh yeah.
And what they could be. And I think that they have gone all in, but I don't think they've guaranteed themselves anything.
How do you think you convince somebody like Giannis to stick around, though? Do you think you do so with depth or with players whose names he knows?
I mean, obviously. I also think that, again, that's more than just a one-off season problem to solve, right? Yeah. That's over the course of they've found themselves in a place where they have to trade like 3 firsts and 2 pick swaps. That's AD compensation, man.
It is. That's absolutely fair to point out. But like, it just like, think of it as they're trading those picks for Giannis potentially. Like, if they make this trade, if they stay the course completely and they keep Bud and they keep everybody around and they have another early round, you know, or mid round playoff exit, Giannis is gone. It's over.
If this is the difference between signing Giannis or not signing Giannis, like, no duh, you do it every time. My point is that you don't put yourself in a position where you have to go all in for Jrue Holiday, who's a very good player, but that's a lot for him, mm-hmm. right? The compensation that they got. And so it's more of you have to do that now, but this has been a several year process of like, if you want to keep Giannis around, that is something that is more than just one off season. And they find themselves in a point where they had to make some moves. And my point is that you try to address some things before you find yourself in a point of desperation.
Yeah. I mean, where you and I are in complete agreement is that like letting Brogdon walk hurt. Like if they just keep Brogdon around, is he the difference between winning a championship or not? Maybe not, but keeping Brogdon doesn't cost you 3 first rounders and a couple pick swaps.
Right.
Like that's, and now at this stage of their careers, I still think I think Brogdon, I don't think he's as good a player as Jrue Holiday, but is Brogdon and George Hill and Bledsoe Jrue Holiday, you know, in terms of guard rotations? That's a fair kind of question to ask. I just think like you can't let mistakes compound each other, right?
Right.
And you know, the fact that you let Brogdon walk, if they were to get super conservative now out of fear of what the team or what the organization, what the state of the organization might be if and when Giannis leaves, well, then you're completely screwed because you're basically just, it's the same thing. Andy Kamenetsky on Twitter today, he and I had a back and forth and because I was asking the question and I'll probably have to leak this into the second segment about how, because everybody's marveling at like Sam Presti has 16 picks over the next 5 years, whatever it is. And David, is it David Griffin? It isn't.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It is David Griffin, right?
Yeah.
Griff has, you know, a crazy treasure chest of his own. And I was kind of thinking about it. I was like, when was the last time we saw that treasure chest turn into the thing that we assume it could turn into? You know, I'd rather have AD and Jrue Holiday than a crazy treasure chest of all of these picks. I'd rather have, I'd rather have James Harden than whatever Sam Presti thought he was getting when they traded away James Harden, you know, and the reason I say all this is because, you know, small markets have kind of convinced themselves and fans that like the only way that you can be successful is with this monstrous treasure chest. And I don't know, man, when you get some of these players, you really got to go all out to try to keep them no matter what it might cost. And I prefer what Milwaukee did versus just kind of saying, well, I'm sure we could probably get like 8 or 9 picks for Giannis if he was to hit the open market. I just prefer if I was a Milwaukee fan, I would want my team going down swinging in the attempt to keep him around.
I know we got to take a break. I want to talk about small market strategies though, like build on that point when we come back.
Today's show is brought to you in part by Built Bar. Head on over to builtbar.com, use promo code LOCKEDON, and save $10 off your first order, your second order, your third order, and however many orders you or your friends that you tell about this great product get to benefit from. They have great flavors, everything from caramel brownie. My personal favorite name is Cherry Barcia. The cookies and cream one is fantastic. And then they have the regular, you know, salted caramel is my original favorite flavor. And it's great no matter what you might be looking for. Are you looking to supplement a meal while you're trying to cut weight? Are you looking to have a little bit of extra protein to add to a meal if you're trying to gain weight? Are you trying to maintain weight by, you know, just having a nice healthy snack? It's going to be great for you. It's going to have you covered. So head on over again to builtbar.com, use promo code LOCKEDON, and save $10 off your next order. Again, promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off at builtbar.com.
So I'm in a group DM with Adam Modis, obviously Locked On NBA, and he covers the Nuggets. Kirk Your Enthusiasm podcast, I think is what it's still called. He covers the Mavericks for Mavs Moneyball. Doyle, who also covers the Mavericks. David Naylor, who covers the Minnesota teams. And then, you know, a couple people who no longer... Ryan Morton, who does social media for Fear the Sword. And then a couple people who don't...
Cavs, yeah.
Yeah, who don't really cover teams anymore. And I basically made the point because the conversation that I get kind of frustrated with is like, woe is me, we're in a small market. We have to operate so differently from all of these other teams. And my thing is like, I hope that isn't coming from a place where the concern is luxury tax, because we're seeing it with Tillman Fertitta. We've seen it in Denver forever, where Stan Kroenke has been absolutely against paying the luxury tax. You see it in all of these markets, and it's like they're owned by billionaires too. There's no difference there. You know, if anything, the Lakers are owned by people who are not billionaires. And you know, it's an ownership group where there are definitely billionaires in the group, but the main stakeholder in the Lakers are the Buss family, and they are not billionaires. And you know, and yes, the Lakers generate a lot more revenue than some of those other teams. But I kind of wonder if is this a chicken or egg kind of situation where is the fact that the Lakers have never been concerned about paying the luxury tax, is that part of the reason why they generate as much revenue as they do and they have so much loyalty from players and fans as they do? Because that is never something that we've really had to worry about, whether or not they're actually going to do that. And, you know, you look at some of these other teams and some of these other small markets where they have convinced their fans that they have this financial ceiling that they cannot break through. And one, I don't think it's very good for the sport. And two, I just think it's built on a fallacy that doesn't take into account the full context of what some of these billionaires are capable of putting actually committing to financially to their teams.
Who is the second most successful franchise in the NBA behind the Lakers over the last 20 years?
Oh, last 20 years? Oh, the Spurs.
Smallest market in the NBA.
Right.
Not the second, not the most, you know, impactful small market team. They've been the second best, right, organization in the last 20 years. We've got 6 titles in that time. They've got 4 because their first one was in 99. So just missing this cutoff.
But even if you were to count that, like 4 to 5 or whatever, like sure, it's still insane.
They're still, right, they've got, and there's nobody else that really has an argument over the last 20 years. It's the Lakers and Spurs and everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And so how did they do it, right? They got the, they had a number one pick, right? They tanked for a year when Duncan was coming into the draft. And for those of you too young, Duncan was one of those types similar to Anthony Davis or LeBron, where everybody knew as he was coming into the league, this guy is a sure thing superstar, right?
I remember watching him at Wake Forest and I was like, oh my God.
Right. So yeah, he would have been the, he would have been the number one pick if he came out after his sophomore year at Wake Forest. He waited two more years and came out after his senior year, right? Mm-hmm. And so he was as
and kept his play up, because like there was another there's a player right from Gonzaga who's coming in who could have been a lottery pick, went back to school, and then now is like a late first, early second rounder type player.
Right, right. And yeah, no, and Duncan was like the number one guy on the board for years, right? Mm-hmm. And so when he came into the league, he was as sure of a thing as anyone. So hit your number one picks, right? Lord knows if you're tanking, you're going to get some of those some of the time, right? So they nailed the David Robinson pick, even though they had to wait a couple of years for him to fulfill his naval commitment. And they hit the Tim Duncan pick. So this is the like how to do it as a small market team. They their scouting staff was superb. Right. Mm-hmm. They found Ginobili. They found Parker. They found
opened different up guys. The global market, basically.
Oh, right. And so they found kind of a they hustled up. They found a niche that nobody else had really discovered, which was like, oh, the rest of the world is getting really good at basketball. Right. And not every other team in the NBA is devoting the proper resources to this international expansion. And so some guys that other teams have barely heard of, we're experts on them and like, oh, this dude's really good. And oh, we get him at the 28th pick. Sure. When he's in talent wise, if he played in America, he would have been a lottery pick because people would have known who he was. So they found a market inefficiency. They found a weakness, but it came from the basketball, right? This whole idea of liquidation of assets being what's lauded and just stockpiling these, like, look, they've done a great job to sell off what they've got and to get future and to get value for it, right? And that should be applauded. But that is, I would argue, one of the relatively easier things to do.
Yeah.
It's making a lot happen. And let's be real, a lot of those picks that are owned by other teams are from teams that are probably going to be very good for most of that.
Once you send your star over there, you understand that the picks that you're going to be coming back aren't going to be early picks.
That's right. That's right. And like Anthony Davis is 27 years old. Lakers are probably going to be good for a while. And and so you're talking picks in the teens to the late 20s. And how often are those guys great players? Well, you got to have a great scouting department if you're a small market team and you want sustained success, because you do have to find your Jokic's at 40. Oh, we've got a superstar now. You've got to find your Tony Parker's, your Manu Ginobili's. And that is, I think a lot of times, like you said, that teams can get their fan bases convinced like, oh, we're in this small market and we have to just, it's like, no, man, like there's a roadmap to doing it. And with the Spurs on top of all that, they had continuity. They had Greg Popovich all along, RC Buford all along.
And committed to Popovich too, by the way. Because there was they very easily could have just ditched him. The year before Duncan, there were some concerns like, is this actually going to work out or whatever? But they stuck with it, and he's the best coach in the NBA.
So the second most successful franchise in the NBA tanked once in 1997, and going forward had the second most successful run in the entire NBA.
Mm-hmm.
From that point on. And if you're talking about consistently making the playoffs, they've had the best run of anyone, right? It's only by championships by which the Lakers have had a superior run over those last 20 years, which ain't nothing. And that's what counts to me. But you can make an argument the Spurs are the most successful, right, over that
period of time. Yeah, just in terms of consistency, if that's what you value.
They just had and it ain't like they didn't win championships, and they just had a 20 plus year playoff streak snapped. So that's the smallest market in the NBA. It's more like building in excuses for why we don't succeed to me when I hear a lot of the small markets talk than it is like legit basketball stuff. Conversely, we got a couple teams in the biggest markets in the NBA, the absolute biggest markets in the NBA who can never get it right.
Yeah. So not since Michael Jordan in Chicago and the Knicks, period.
Bro, and the Clippers were bad for years.
Yeah.
And so it's not just this magical panacea of being in this big market that makes you, we were bad for 7 years, man. Cause like the basketball decisions that you make matter, and you can go a long way as a small market, even in the NBA, toward building sustainable success if you are good at those things.
I also think there's immense value in just like training your fans to expect a lot out of your organization, right? So you just mentioned the Lakers being bad for the last 7 years. You realize how loud this show exists because people wanted me to hop on here and scream about how annoyed I was.
Their frustration, right?
Yeah, yeah. They wanted me to voice how angry they were at how the Lakers were being run over the last 7 years, right? They were pissed about it. And there was never an acceptance over like, yeah, this is just who we are now. This is the league has become too difficult to navigate. No, it was never an excuse. It was just, no, get this shit turned around, man. Figure it the fuck out. And I listened to some of the excuses made from front offices. And I hear some of the ways that some fans talk with those teams. And I'm like, man, you're doing it a disservice to your own fanhood. It's like, are you pissed? Knicks fans, like, why are you still going to Knicks games? Why is that? Why are you still supporting James Dolan? What's going on? Like, what are you there for? It's just like, you should be. And yet the team that gets the most excuses made for them year after year after year by the people covering that team tends to be the Knicks fans. Oh, it's just another year. We'll get a free agent. The next year is going to be the year that we finally get the guys. Like, what? What have you been paying attention to? Hold your team accountable. And I don't like telling people how to fan, but at the same time, the Lakers have always acknowledged like, no, we want the high expectations. We want to hear how angry you guys are, you know, when things aren't going the way that you expect them to go with us. And I think holding yourself to that kind of expectation, having the bar set so high, and continuing to try to push that bar higher, by the way, not just clear it, but keep pushing it higher, is something that has done the Lakers, you know, a whole ton of good. And, you know, to get back to where we started on this with Milwaukee, I think it's really good that the Bucks are basically saying like, no, we know we can keep this guy here. We know not just what's at stake, right? Because everybody can acknowledge what's at stake. Everybody understands, like, if Giannis leaves, then the Bucks go back to like hoping for another Michael Redd, you know. But it's that like, no, we have confidence in ourselves, we can keep them. And the reason I brought up the exchange between me and Andy earlier today was like, would you, he asked me basically, would you have traded Jaylen Brown for potentially only 1 year of Anthony Davis? And my answer is yes, because Jaylen Brown is never going to be Anthony Davis. It's never going to happen. And if Anthony Davis comes and wins you a championship, then I'm willing to sacrifice Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum's career for that championship. And the fact that Ainge just refuses to do this, like there were reports again today that he was in on Drew Holiday. And the fact that he just continues to pass up on making this deal for these players who might leave a year later just kind of sends a message to everybody. No, I don't have any confidence in my organization's ability to keep these guys around. That's not a great message to send to people. He's already offering up Kemba Walker. Like he convinced Kemba Walker to leave a franchise that like he was the face of and like really hurt Kemba to leave, to realize, to come to the recognition that he was not going to be able to turn that franchise around. Kemba, come here. You're going to be the face of our franchise. Actually, on second thought, can we move you and Gordon Hayward to be able to free up room for James Harden that we aren't even going to acquire, by the way? Like, it's not going to happen. And like, I just look at the way that like the cultures of these various teams and the built-in excuses that they make time after time after time, it was really refreshing to see Milwaukee say, no, we're really going to go for this. and maybe win a championship. Maybe that's enough to keep Giannis around. Maybe it isn't. It isn't. And maybe we're screwed for years on end after that. But we're screwed knowing that we gave it a shot. That, to me, there's immense value in that.
There is. It's. I love thinking about and discussing the different cultures or different front offices and different organizations and just kind of how they see the world, because it can be so different around the NBA. And you brought up a couple of examples that always make me smile. I saw you smiling
on the other side. Mic.
All the stuff you're talking about Boston, I don't particularly have a problem with that approach. I hope they keep it forever. So.
Let's take another quick second here, because there is the James Harden situation to talk about. And yes, this isn't like a Lakers-centric thing. There isn't much new stuff to talk about. We spent 2 days talking about the Schroeder deal. The way that the league is being shaped around the Lakers is really important, just to be able to understand what the Lakers might have to do in order to not just stay competitive, but remain solidified as the title favorites moving forward for the season. So hang tight. We'll come back and talk about the entire James Harden situation, which is another bag of crazy pills in and of itself. I love dumping on him. It's not just Celtics, but he was such an annoying player too. Like, he's just anyway. So as things currently sit, and it's 10:07 my time as we're recording this, as things currently sit, James Harden would prefer to go to Brooklyn and play alongside Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. There was a report that apparently there's some kind of potential verbal agreement to send like Spencer Dinwiddie, Caris LeVert, maybe a couple picks and some spare change out to Houston to send Harden to Brooklyn. And I am almost never going to be on Team Fertitta ever, but they can't make that deal. You just can't. We are in this era of star empowerment and all of those things. And I think we have made a lot of really cool progress in a players' league and all of that. But you can't allow a player who is under contract force you to send him to a team for a lesser trade package than he could potentially get on the open market. And like, the difference between this and the Anthony Davis situation is that the package that the Lakers sent back to New Orleans was still the best package that was available out there on the market that was there for Anthony Davis. And like, I just think from where Fertitta's, and I guess there was another report that they are willing to sit through an uncomfortable situation. Yes, shocker that Tillman Fertitta is willing to continue to employ James Harden, who generates more revenue than anybody who is going to bring who is going to play there in his stead. But this is one of those situations where the player is trying to force his way to a situation. And also, like, remember when Kobe demanded a trade, and
I do,
and didn't want Chicago to send Luol Deng back to the Lakers?
No Deng, no deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I thought it was, I thought at the time, and I still believe this to be the case. Dr. Jerry Buss was really smart to say, all right, fine, you're just going to have to play here then. And we're going to figure this out. We're going to try to put a better team around you. And here we are a couple championships later. And it wound up working out for all the parties involved. And what you can't have is, you know, allow yourself to be forced by a star to make a shitty trade just because that star wants to go play with his two buddies in Brooklyn. That's where I sit on it.
So what So how do you enforce that? What's your leverage against Harden there?
Well, Harden can hold out, but he's still going to be in Houston, and he's only hurting his own, you know, case there. And if it gets to a point where Brooklyn eventually says, like, they start taking pieces off the table, I'm sure there's somebody out there who's going to be willing to at least anybody can meet the asking price of Spencer Dinwiddie and Caris LeVert and a couple bits of like day old ham sandwiches, right? Like that's not a very hard deal to top. And I like Spencer Dinwiddie. You know, I think he's a very good player and a very good contract, but when you consider what Fertitta is really prioritizing here, he wants somebody who is going to get butts in seats, and Dinwiddie isn't going to do that. Caris LeVert isn't going to do that. So he's probably holding out for a deal along the lines of like Ben Simmons and a couple picks from Philadelphia. Right. Mm-hmm. And if I were Fertitta or his new GM or whatever, I would go to Philadelphia and I would say, if you put this on the table, you can have James Harden right now, and he can play alongside Joel Embiid. But what I'm not going to do is force myself into making an inferior trade when I don't necessarily have to.
Sure.
Like what's Harden's leverage here? Like he's under contract.
He is under contract, right? But there's a. Do you remember the Vince Carter situation in Toronto?
Hmm.
That was, for listeners, if you're not familiar with, it was a similar situation. Vince wanted out after, you know, he was the darling in Toronto for a few years. It had gotten to the point where he was ready to and wanting to move on. And they were, you know, he wanted to go to a couple of specific places, and his play fell off staggeringly over the last week or two before he was eventually dealt, right? He was this 25-point-per-game guy. Well, all of a sudden, is averaging like 8 points per game. Mm-hmm. And there have also been, you know, guys who have mysterious back spasms all of a sudden. And there's a lot of ways that having a disgruntled superstar can go sideways. And we had one in Kobe, right? I think part of why that ended up working out the way that it did, though, was that he had won championships with Dr. Buss, and there was, you know, Kobe was obviously really pissed off that offseason.
Yeah, he wanted to play on Pluto.
Right, right. And I think that being their history together, there was something to build off of that doesn't necessarily exist between Harden and Fertitta. Right? Fertitta's a relatively new owner, mm-hmm. and they don't have championships that they've won together and history to lean back on in tough times.
If anything, so, the only history is bad history, right? Fertitta showed up and demanded that, like, they cut costs at every turn.
Right. So the degree to which Harden gives Fertitta the benefit of the doubt is probably not significant. And certainly not what was between Dr. Buss and Kobe. Mm-hmm. So you're right. I'm not saying that this is just something where Harden holds all of the cards, but just NBA history suggests that a disgruntled superstar can, your franchise is basically on hold until that gets resolved. And is he filling the seats? Is he filling the stands under those circumstances? I'm skeptical, especially in a where we don't have butts to be putting in seats
right now,
really, right? Certainly not to full capacity. And so that argument in some ways goes by the wayside. And I don't know. It's going to be interesting. It's always interesting to see those power dynamics play out when a star wants to go. This seems very specific. Like, I want to go and I only want to go here. But yeah, that's something that there's a checkered history of that in the NBA. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Well, AD was kind of the outlier in that he actually wound up with the team that he wanted to go to, right? Mm-hmm. Like previously, remember Paul George initially wanted to be with the Lakers. He wound up in OKC. Kawhi Leonard wanted to be in a couple of different spots. He wound up in Toronto, And look, he went to Toronto, won a championship, and that wasn't enough to keep him in Toronto. So, you know, for those who were just saying like, yeah, you go there and you win, maybe that's just enough period to keep that star there. That's not always the case. But Toronto still does have that championship. Like, I'm sure there are no Toronto fans out there who are looking at the way things went with Kawhi and saying, God, I wish we wouldn't have traded
for him. Sure.
DeMar DeRozan for him, you know? So like, I just think, you know, here with Harden, some team is going to be willing to make the gamble, you know, and I think if I was Fertitta, I would hold out for that gamble. And, can Harden make things really difficult? Absolutely. Although, like, based on that article in The Athletic the other day, or a couple weeks ago, or maybe last week, it seems like he's making things pretty damn difficult as they currently sit, right? Where he's yelling at Austin Rivers for his own missed free throw. Mm-hmm. So, like, I just think, and this is my, I got to be careful with how I frame this, because I don't want it to come off as like a backwards take that like things were better before player empowerment. I don't believe that at all. But I do think to a certain extent, I got to be careful here. I know.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I know.
Capitalist Anthony is starting to. Yeah.
I do think. To a certain extent, stars should also hold some accountability if they aren't lending themselves to winning situations. Like, they can't just peace out and say, well, it just didn't work out over there. You know, that's too bad. Because I mean, Harden was
stop
given...
Stop them.
Well, you can, but didn't Houston try? Like, he wanted Russell Westbrook. That didn't work out. He wanted Chris Paul. That didn't work out. They had Dwight Howard there. That didn't work out either.
I'm not saying he's right about anything. I'm saying he holds the power. They're the most difficult people to replace. Like, even in your argument, you say, well, Harden puts butts in the seats.
Yeah.
Well, that, I agree. That makes Harden the most valuable person in this equation, right? He's the least like difficult person to replace.
Most difficult, yeah.
Or the most difficult person to replace.
Least replaceable.
And so Harden, you know, from Harden's perspective, he's not looking at his current situation being like, I can't do better than this, right? And he's trying to use, and he may not succeed in that, but he's trying to use his position and power to get to where he wants to. But that doesn't mean that, like, he doesn't have blame for why they haven't won a championship there, or any successes or any moves even that haven't worked out that maybe he's influenced. Of course, you're right about that. I'm just saying that doesn't matter.
But I think it should. Like, it should matter why? A little bit. It should matter a little bit that this guy's a career loser in the postseason, and now he's demanding a different situation where he might not be as big of a loser. Like, that should matter.
In what way should it matter, though?
In like, all right, so Kevin Durant goes to Golden State, right? He wins those championships, and they're seen as like the lamest championships that any star has ever won, right? Any all-timer has ever won. And I think whatever championship that Harden, if he goes out to Brooklyn and he wins a championship, we should look at them the same way. This guy was a joke in the postseason. It was the most predictable thing that the longer these series went on, because he refused to get in shape and because he refused to be involved in plays that he didn't have the ball, that he wound up being this kind of loser in the postseason. And now instead of holding himself accountable for his own deficiencies, he's looking at the situation after having played with three different stars who at when they showed up were still, well, Russ less so than Dwight and Chris Paul, but still when Dwight and Chris Paul showed up, they thought this should be the perfect, this should be a great combination for Harden, but it wasn't. And like, he could find a different situation and all that stuff. And this is why I'm saying, like, if I'm Fertitta, I'm saying, you consider that your perfect situation? No, man, I'm not going to make it that easy for you. Go make your better situation somewhere else. And if you actually really want to sacrifice and get eventually to Brooklyn by way of free agency where you have to take a lot less money to get there, then that's on you, bud. But given what you did for me while you were here, and given what shortcomings you had your entirety of your tenure here in the postseason, he's a fantastic, one of the best regular season players we'll ever see. But where you make your career, where you kind of carve out what your career is in the postseason. And in the postseason, it was really easy to predict how those postseasons were going to go. And now Harden is looking at everybody around him as to why that was the case. And if I were Fertitta, I would say, no, man, like you don't get the easy way out here. You actually have to find your way and carve out an actual resume for yourself.
But the accountability is in the resume. The accountability is in the perception of him, right? Like, I want to see the next person who tweets a Harden greater than Kobe tweet next year and watch us swap that shit into outer space, right?
Yeah.
Like you don't, that is part of the price that's paid from everything that you said, right? Is that it's in legacy and it's in accomplishments, right? Team, especially accomplishments or lack thereof. But that is a different dynamic than his dynamic with Tillman Fertitta. Fertitta can take that approach that you're talking about, but does that help the Rockets? Does that help Fertitta? At some point, that's pride, right? Saying like, I don't want this guy to get the best of me or get what he wants.
Yeah, and after we saw that with San Antonio. Mm-hmm. We saw that with Kawhi, and it didn't
work out
for San
Antonio.
How did that work out? Mm-hmm. It didn't work out very well for San Antonio.
Pride is a mother, and so you're right, Fertitta. I mean, Harden is under contract, but you're playing with fire there, and you're not necessarily looking out for your own best interest if you're Fertitta, if you want to play hardball in that respect. That's something Harden loses, but so does Fertitta.
Yeah, I don't really know. Like, if I'm Fertitta, I say, send me back Kyrie or there's no deal. You know, if you're, and I wonder what Kevin Durant would actually say to that one.
I'm here for like a maximum Shakespearean betrayal. Like, could you imagine, like Kyrie and AD or Kyrie and KD, right? They're like, all right, hook up. I'm injured this year, but next year, boy, we're going to get after it. You build everything toward then. Then you ship Kyrie to Houston, to like the shell of the Houston Rockets franchise after a fire sale. Like, it would be like the most Shakespearean betrayal. Oh, I kind of need it.
That's what I'm here for. So how do you think this plays out, though? You think Harden winds up going to Brooklyn?
Yeah. Just if NBA history is a guide on that. Maybe it's not during this offseason, but if that's the only place he wants to go, I think that's probably where he ends up.
I think he goes to a different city. I think he moves. He gets moved.
That'll be fun to see. That'll be fun. A different city. Yeah. All right. So I got Brooklyn and you got the field.
Yeah. Well, but the field minus Houston, right? So like I think he gets moved, but we'll see. I gotta put my bet board back up. I think I owe you for Portland kind of sort of making the playoffs last year.
Who did we play in the first round of the playoffs?
I know.
Excuse, kind of sort of my ass.
What was the deal there? I have to go on Reddit, right? And do an AMA.
Oh, I don't even remember what the terms were. Yeah, I just knew you were going to lose. Even when it was not looking good for me, I just like, yeah. Now nah, Dame yeah, was getting
they,
that.
They, yeah, the NBA, the NBA expanded the playoffs like to try to get into like by like four teams. You're right.
I saw it coming the whole time.
Totally saw that coming. I'm not bitter at all. God. Suns went 8-0 and they couldn't squeeze in there. All right. Yeah. That's going to do it though for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. After the next time you and I talk, Pete, the draft will have taken place and I'm sure the league is going to look even more different than it is right now, mm-hmm. which is hugely different from the last time you and I spoke. Make sure, by the way, if you guys are interested in analysis on the Schroeder deal, I had John Hamm, who covered Dennis Schroeder over there in OKC for 107.7 The Fan. Then he has a Dream Team pod over there, so check that out. I had Eric Pincus on in yesterday's show to talk about the various scenarios that the Lakers might be getting ready for here and all of their various options, depending on who opts in and who opts out, plus some on the Kyle Kuzma extension situation, which I believe the deadline passed and he didn't get one. So the Lakers are where they are in on that front. But yeah, this is every day that we record these pods, it's going to be a very different situation. So make sure if you guys want to stay up to date on that, you tune into this and across the entire network, depending on where various players are coming from. The Lakers still have, by the way, a ton of flexibility in free agency this year, and we don't know what that's going to look like as well. So tomorrow's show should be really fun. This show was a lot of fun. And then we're a week and a half away from camp opening up. So here we are. That's going to do it for this episode, though. Have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. I'll talk to you tomorrow.